Good morning, and welcome to today's event, How Innovation is Bridging the Medical Dental Divide. I'm Gina Constantakopoulos, Senior Director of Partner Engagement here at Matter. Matter is a healthcare technology incubator and innovation hub built on a belief that collaboration between entrepreneurs and industry is the best way to develop healthcare solutions. Our mission is to accelerate the pace of change of healthcare, and we do three things in service of this mission. First, we incubate startups. Since we launched 9 years ago in 2015, we've worked with more than 1,000 companies that range from very early stage growth startups and to scaling businesses, and we have a suite of services to help them at every stage of development. Our member companies have raised over $5 billion to fuel their growth. Second, we work with large organizations such as health systems, life sciences companies, payers, and organizations like CareQuest Innovation Partners that help strengthen their innovation capacity. We help them find value in emerging technology solutions, unlock the full potential of their internal innovators, and create more human-centered healthcare experience through system-level collaborations. And third, we're a nexus for people who are passionate about healthcare innovation. We bring people together to be inspired, to learn, and to connect with each other. We produce a lot of programs, including large-scale events for the broader community and small forums exclusively for our members. This is our third year of working with CareQuest Innovation Partners on Smile Health. It's an accelerator program where transformational solutions to improve oral health take center stage. We are quite literally empowering innovation that helps the world smile through propelling the integration between oral health and overall health. For the past 2 years, we set out an open call to entrepreneurs around the world with solutions to make oral health more accessible, equitable, and integrated into overall health. We received over 200 submissions from around the globe and have worked with 10 companies. These companies received mentorship, curriculum, and most importantly, validation studies and connections with industry leaders such as Colgate, Cigna, DentaQuest, and Henry Schein, who are here with us today, and additional companies, including investors. We launched the 2024 Smile Health program in March with the same focus on making oral health more accessible, equitable, and integrated into overall health. New to this year's program are two tracks that take a deeper dive into real areas of need and opportunity. These tracks were created by and will be led by the industry leaders that you're going to hear from today. The first is connecting chronic care with overall health, which asks how we can help people at risk or with chronic conditions better manage their overall health. And we're pleased to have Dr. Carrie Sun, the Chief Dental Officer of Cigna Healthcare, and the Chief Corporate Affairs Officer of Henry Schein, David Kochman, sharing their perspectives on this topic. We also are looking at how we can reduce disparities through oral health and asking how can we leverage innovative oral health solutions to better identify and/or address health disparities. And joining us for this is Dr. Maria Ryan, the EVP and Chief Clinical Officer from the Colgate-Palmolive Company, and Camilla Chittle, the Chief Operating Officer for DentaQuest. Both discussions will be moderated by Katie D'Amico, the Vice President of Growth and Innovation at CareQuest Innovation Partners. And now I'd like to introduce Dr. Myesha Mentor-Jordan, President and CEO of CareQuest Institute for Oral Health and the parent of CareQuest Innovation Partners, to share with us the vision of how and why oral health needs to be more accessible, equitable, and integrated, and the role Smile Health is playing to make this possible through innovation. Dr. Mentor-Jordan is a physician and business leader. In her role as president and CEO of CareQuest Institute for Oral Health, she guides the premier oral health nonprofit in the U.S. She was formerly the chief medical officer and CEO of the Dimock Center in Massachusetts. Dr. Mentor-Jordan has a keen interest in ending social inequity and serves on multiple boards, both in a professional and personal capacity, to advance this interest. I can think of no better person to start off our conversation for today. Dr. Mentor-Jordan, please join us.
Thank you, Gina. I'm so excited to be here today to welcome everyone and dive deeper into the Smile Health program. Before we do that, I want to share a quick story. As Gina mentioned, I led one of the largest federally qualified health centers in Massachusetts. And when I joined that organization, I understood broadly that oral health was important, but I didn't understand how incredibly significant the unmet need was. It wasn't until I learned about how many of our pediatric patients and the children in our Head Start and Early Head Start programs who were as young as 3 years old, that they were actually being sedated in order to address their significant dental disease. And at that moment, that was an aha moment for me. And it ultimately brought me to CarePlus Institute. What I know is that our healthcare system doesn't work for everyone. And to change that, we need innovative new models and tools to transform. And that is ultimately what our Smile Health program aims to do. Smile Health is a unique and proven accelerator program focused on high opportunity areas that are advancing accessible, equitable, and integrated solutions. This program starts with a mission to improve the oral health of all. We know we can drive impact and improve outcomes for underserved populations by expanding health access for so many who go without needed care. And innovation is a key to how we do this. As a physician, I also understand firsthand the connection between the mouth, the body, and the mind, and that these are not disparate systems, but essential components of holistic health. We know that health is critical for people to thrive and to reach their full potential as happy people. This is doing good. We also know that it is good business. As was mentioned, we are in our third year now and have already seen solutions that are changing how we look at oral health. Companies like AurisDX, a saliva-based oral cancer diagnostic that can aid with earlier detection and prevent unnecessary invasive biopsies, and Grin, a platform solution that uses AI-enhanced oral scans to coordinate care. These companies have opportunities to not only address unmet patient needs, but scale strong businesses. This program is special in that it brings together industry-leading companies to collaborate alongside startups to help validate key areas of their solutions. 2 years and nearly 20 validation studies later, we can say Smile Health is really advancing solutions and creating value. We're also continuing to convene established industry alongside the innovation community. We do that through events like Health, where last year we brought oral health to health for the first time to a broader health audience to focus on the opportunities for more integrated care. We will be returning as part of the 2024 program with this year's cohorts presenting there. Expanding awareness around how oral health is a top priority. I'd like to thank Cigna Healthcare, Henry Schein, Colgate-Palmolive, and DentaQuest for their ongoing support and collaboration in the program, and to our other partners that make this program vital. For those of you in the audience, I welcome you and invite you to hear about how you can be part of bridging the medical-dental divide. Gina, back to you.
Thank you, Maisha. It's great to have you. With that, I think that primes us for our first panel and topic around chronic care. I'm going to turn it over to Katie D'Amico and have both David and Carrie join us.
Thank you so much, Gina and Maisha. And I'm so excited for our two panels today with leaders who are paving the way to more integrated health, inclusive of oral healthcare. And you're going to hear about the amazing work they're doing in communities across the US and also globally. And across our panels today in these four organizations, you're going to hear from each represent different segments of the healthcare industry. And representation on both the clinical and business sides. So very confident you're going to walk away with a few new insights and actions to take forward. Okay, we can jump right into our first panel. We have Carrie from Cigna and David from Henry Schein here to talk about the critical connection between chronic care and oral health. Thank you both so much for being with us today. We know there's mounting evidence that nearly every chronic condition has linkages to oral health. More than 90% of systemic diseases have oral manifestations, including heart disease, maternal health, diabetes, to name a few. We know there's a strong linkages with diabetes. As an example, if you have diabetes, that increases your risk of developing perio gum disease by nearly 90%. We know, you know, there's a lot of implications to gum disease impacting A1C management as well too. And with that, you know, comes tremendous impacts on overall health and cost to care. So one example of the link between oral health and the opportunity to improve health outcomes and reduce the cost of care through better oral health. And so, Carrie, would love to turn to you, being a clinician, and hear a little bit more about where you're seeing the greatest linkages between chronic conditions and oral health.
Yeah, thanks, Katie. And I think you hit some of the key ones. Obviously, diabetes is one of the conditions that has the strongest connection, particularly to gum disease. But, you know, the list has been continue to grow over time. We've seen a lot of studies showing, again, the connection between gum disease and having increased risk of heart disease. And also, I think one of the things we are also seeing with respiratory disease, you know, sometimes the bacteria from gum disease can get aspirated into our lungs, and there's some connections to pneumonia. And again, oral health in connection there. We've also seen autoimmune conditions, lupus, for example, or rheumatoid arthritis. There's a difficult syndrome to say, it's Sjögren's syndrome, but all of those are finding they result in having dry mouth, lesions in the mouth, and also greater risk for gum disease and tooth decay. We're also starting to see some research, again, relating to Alzheimer's disease and dementia and how that's connecting. They're seeing some ties to the, again, the bacteria from gum disease connected there. And I think most recently, we've actually seen a recent study showing that some of the bacteria for gum disease and colon cancer. So we are starting to see that whole list of chronic conditions really tie into oral health, which is critical. I would say the other area that we've been looking at is, you know, how does oral health also fit into behavioral health and mental health, you know, stress, anxiety, as well as, you know, things like eating disorders all tie in to that overall health wellness. So certainly those are many of the conditions that we're continuing to watch and seeing what comes about from that.
Thank you. That's great. Oral health is overall health, if you take one thing away from today. David, would love for you to, if there's anything else to add on or, you know, other perspectives. I know you come from years of experience on the medical side as well, too. Anything that surprised you on, you know, really the critical role that oral health is playing in overall health?
Yeah, thanks for the question. And, you know, thanks again to CareQuest for putting this on and to Matter for putting this on. I think Carrie provided a really comprehensive list. I was typing notes and he kept hitting them with Alzheimer's. You know, the correlations continue to grow there. And look, my background is as an attorney, so I'm not a clinician. And in a very amateur way, when I first started hearing about the correlation, I thought it was behavioral. I thought it's people that, you know, take care of their teeth or people that care about their overall health. And that was the connection. But you start to see more and more longitudinal data, which really goes to showing inflammation and the oral biome have that direct connection to what's going on overall. And if you think about it, the mouth is the biggest, we'll say open wound, but open space. And we're putting stuff into it pretty constantly, if you're like myself and like to eat. So taking care of that, it does make sense. You know, some of the data points really are astounding of what inflammation can do. You think about this, right? It swells the blood vessels, reduces blood flow, and increases the risk of clots. And some of those data points around the correlation are really astounding, right? Individuals with periodontal disease, twice as likely to die of a heart attack and three times as likely to die of a stroke. We know that 2 in 5 people have periodontal disease, and nearly half of them have some form of cardiovascular disease. So raising this awareness overall, it doesn't solve it, because it really is, I think, as you said, overall health is what we're approaching, but oral health needs to be a critical component of it. And from our perspective, we are starting to see greater awareness amongst the medical community that interacting with their oral health professional partners, how do we create a stronger linkage ultimately will give us healthier patient outcomes?
Thank you, David. And I love what you said, really, the mouth being the gateway. And just to build on that too, saliva. Some are saying saliva could be the new blood. And so thinking about, you know, more we can proactively detect through the saliva, which we know trickles down to the rest of the body as well. Okay, transitioning a little bit, I would love to hear, and I know many on this call would as well, here's some ways that your organizations are helping people at risk with chronic conditions better manage their overall health through oral health. So whoever wants to take it first, maybe David, if you'd like to start.
Sure, I'm happy to start, Katie. And right, so from the Henry Schein perspective, we're not clinicians. What we do is we help clinicians to provide better care to their patients. So our goal is to really work symbiotically with the profession to identify what are the ways that we can help advance and support care. And we do it in a number of ways. From our vantage, there's really kind of four key journeys that have to get walked for us to get to a deeper integrated care model. The first is really around, we need scope of practice. Dentists and physicians need to be able to practice without fear that they're impinging or violating rules, and there needs to be reimbursement there. So from Schein's perspective, we are working on lobbying campaigns and partnering with various coalitions to be able to create awareness, to talk about this, to identify if there's any issues, and then to ultimately help to advance better regulatory models and reimbursement models for this care to be advanced. Then the two other journeys. The first is about the infrastructure. And this really speaks to what are the products, solutions, and services that need to be available to both physicians and dentists so that they can advance this better type of care, this better care to treat these chronic conditions. And right now is a most amazing time in healthcare in terms of the technologies that are coming that are not just improvements themselves or feature driven, but actually are helping to really take monumental, cataclysmic steps to launch the evolution of practice of care. You know, a couple to think about here are diagnostic testing, as you're getting to, Katie, right? Taking testing itself, being able to take it outside of the reference lab, which will always be important, but what can we bring into the office itself? Giving patients results and information while they are there. We know that in our consumer-driven, you know, in a hyper-competitive world that we live in, people don't have a lot of time. Convenience is key. So once you have that patient in that care setting, what can you provide to them? Point of care tests, whether it be expanding, you know, simple blood drop tests. There's certainly been a lot in the news about what is available, but trajectory-wise, that is where we ultimately need to go. What can saliva tell us? There's a lot of information that we can glean. A lot of the historical manufacturers are making huge investments to be able to expand that point of care testing to make it cheaper, make it more efficient, and to make it more comprehensible for patients. I'd say two other points would be on workflows, trying to bring an entire workflow together. And it really goes back to the convenience standpoint. You can educate patients all they want, but from the healthcare, when we're sitting in this, we think about this all day. The average person who we're trying to help is not thinking about their health as much as we are. We need to meet them where they are and to try to give them care. So when you can integrate that entire workflow from an oral health perspective of a scan, to be able to have that person see right there what is coming up, what are the issues, and then to have them walk out with some sort of fabricated device so that that whole care is actually completed, that cycle is completed as much as possible while they're in the chair, that's a huge advancement and a lot is going down on that. And then I'd say the final piece is giving visibility through health to the practitioners on the medical and oral health and oral healthcare professional side in terms of what is happening on both sides of the care continuum. And certainly the ONC has advanced with some rules to really promote and support healthcare record interoperability. And I think this will only continue to advance. The fourth point, fourth journey, is a behavioral one. And, you know, this is probably the most vexing one, which is how do you get clinicians to start looking at one another, not thinking as much about the liability components, but thinking about how do we care for this patient as best as we can. Mm-hmm. So it starts first from the education standpoint. You know, historically, or going back, I guess, 120 years, right, we started training medical physicians and dentists separately. Increasingly, you're seeing schools bringing those two, at least in the first couple of years, bringing them together. But how do we actually have an understanding from the educational standpoint that we need these clinicians to start working together? Certainly, there are differences, but they need to be partnering very closely. And then in practice itself, creating those behavioral connections. You see it on a very cottage industry level, right? You'll have someone who's an OB-GYN that is working with a pregnant mother says, hey, you know, maybe you should go talk to a pediatric dentist. But we need to actually create a real infrastructure around this and industrialize this process. So Shine's got a number of ways, but really what we're trying to do is to help support the professional to be able to give better care for their patients.
Yes, thank you, David. And I think you're being humble in that Shine has a number of ways. It's been hard, maybe an innovation challenge in itself, to find a product, solution, or service that Henry Schein isn't providing. And, you know, I think the opportunity too that's super exciting is across both medical and dental practices. And so applaud you and the team for all the amazing work that you're spearheading on the integration front. Carrie, would love to hear on the Cigna front.
Sure. You know, obviously our role is, you know, again, bringing dental benefits for individuals. But I think one of the things that continues to challenge us is that many people just don't go see their dentist. And so a lot of what we need to do, especially with the connections of oral health to overall health, is really help to educate. You know, we have to continue to inform those who have our coverage about the importance of oral health. And again, how it ties into their overall well-being and vitality is critical. I would say, obviously, one of the things that we do is also enhance benefits, especially for those who may have some of these at-risk conditions. We have a program that we have built out where individuals that have some of these chronic conditions that tie into specifically gum disease, and we help to remove some of the cost barriers again so that individuals will get that dental care. I would say the other thing that seems to be very meaningful is, you know, how do we integrate information from our medical partners to start triggering our programs. So looking for individuals who have diabetes, heart disease, chronic kidney disease, and how do we identify them and bring them and engage those programs. So that's one of the things that we've been building out and have the capabilities to work with all of our medical partners and pharmacy vendors as well to make those programs work. One of the other things that seems to be very impactful is to have targeted engagement. So we were also using that information to identify individuals with those conditions. And if we see that they're not getting dental care, we're going to outreach them and you know, just remind them of the importance. And we see some good traction there. A good number of individuals eventually seek care. So very impactful there. And I think one of the things that's been tremendous is that when individuals are getting routine care, preventive care, that's when we see that investment of oral care really playing out, because we actually start seeing medical costs reduce, lower adverse events like hospital visits, et cetera. So there's a lot of benefit, again, to helping individuals start seeking that oral care.
Great. Yes, thank you. And, you know, I love that both of you hit on the importance of awareness and education, both on the provider and the patient side. And that's something I know at CareQuest we're very committed to as well, continuing to advance that. Okay, and our last final few minutes, would love to take a little bit more of a forward-looking approach. And I know you both hit on this a little bit already, but maybe your top one or two greatest opportunity areas that you see to bridge this medical dental divide that exists today. And I know about half of our audience is startups. And so if you have a top piece of advice to innovators in this space, you know, what would that be? David, do you want to go first?
Yep.
You look ready. You are a lawyer.
Yeah, as I'm told, or at least I think lovingly, that I'm a benign lawyer. So I'm not sure if that's good or bad. But there is just manifest opportunity at this moment right now to bring technology in. I think quite an atmospheric observation, and I think appropriately, is healthcare has a lot available, but is not necessarily deploying everything at a rapid pace. because this is our health. If we mess up, there are huge consequences. So there's a lot of circumspection before things are actually put in. There are reasons that we have all of these regulatory rules and reams of lawyers. At the same time, that should not hold us back from taking those advancements. And I think a theme that's trailing through here, our conversation, is empowering the patient, which means we need to put ourselves into the seat of what are patients thinking? How are they operating? Mm-hmm. We need to drive towards convenience, empowering them with information. And a lot of this goes to personalized care. How can you make care more individualized for each and every patient? So one of these comes from wearables, whether it's wearing something on your wrist, having a continuous saliva monitor that is going to give you information about what's going on in your mouth itself. I certainly know CareQuest has been incubating at least one company that has done quite a lot around this, Lura Health, or giving you very simple salivary biomarkers that another of our partners, PDS Health, has been using with their patients. I'd say as well, artificial intelligence. This is being deployed in a number of different environments, but this, while certainly we won't use it as dispositive, can help map what is happening against other large data pools to give us more information so we can be empowered in making decisions. And then third, how can we bring more healthcare into the home? We're not going to be able to bring everyone into the offices. So what can we do in the home? And our partners at Colgate-Palmolive have done quite a lot on this in terms of trying to connect what is going on at home and have that come back to the physician or to the oral healthcare professional. So when you come back in, your dentist can say to you, you know, I see you've been slacking on this brushing, or I noticed that perhaps, you know, your pH balance has been a little bit off. What was going on there? All of this really comes down to individualized, personalized care, empowering the patient with that information so they can ultimately take responsibility for their healthcare, which is really how we're going to make us a healthier community.
Right. Carrie?
No, I appreciate the things Dave mentioned. Similarly, we've been seeing a lot from an area of diagnostics and, you know, saliva testing, et cetera, as well as AI coming into this space. And I think the thing that I would probably advise an innovator is to continue to look at all the individuals, the patient, the dentist, the physician, those like Henry Schein that are connecting those, the clinician to the patient and helping to have better efficient care. All those pieces really need to come into play. The insurer, all those pieces need to come together as you're coming up with solutions to make sure, you know, we're addressing the whole topic, again, of medical and dental together and how that, you know, creates a better solution. And I would say, I think one of the other pieces that to keep in mind is, and it kind of goes into the next topic, is look at the barriers that individuals have. And it goes beyond just the clinical ones, but certainly the social determinants of health that continue to plague individuals at different levels in terms of, you know, what are those barriers and how do we develop solutions to break down those barriers?
Hey, can I just make one other point? I know we're at time, but one other point and a note for innovators as you're thinking about this is you don't have to eat the whole sandwich at once. Try to find partners and collaborate. Do small pilots, because ultimately there's not going to be one perfect way, but find some folks to test the waters with, and then you can go and look at how to scale them.
That's a great add and so important. And thank you both so much for being here today, sharing these insights. And really, this is just the beginning of the discussion. And, you know, we'll share more at the end on how to get involved with our accelerator program. Both Henry Schein and Cigna, like Gina mentioned, are leading a track this year around this exact topic and eager to see innovation in this space. So thank you both so much for everything. And we will now transition into our final panel.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Perfect. Hello, Camilla and Maria. Thank you for being here. This is our final panel. Before I turn it back to Gina to share a little bit more on our Smile Health Accelerator program, thank you again for being here, and also equally important, your continued collaboration on Smile Health, going on year 3 of continued collaboration.
Thanks, okay. Katie.
Thank you, Maria and Camilla, for being here. So this panel is really focused on reducing health disparities and talking about some of those barriers that Carrie actually teed up perfectly in the end of the last panel. We know there's continued disparities in health today based on race, age, gender, socioeconomic status, other social determinants of health. U.S. Black women, for example, are three times more likely than their white counterparts to die in childbirth. We know there's a strong link, of course, between pregnancy and oral health. Up to 75% of pregnant women have early gum disease, which is associated with then preterm birth and low birth weights. We know there's continued access to dental care challenges in the U.S. 68.5 million Americans today don't have access to dental insurance. And we know Hispanic and American Indian people are about two times less likely than their white counterparts to be underinsured. And last quick point I'll make is disparities are not just limited to racial or gender identities. There are also other types of populations, such as veterans. We know they have an increased rate about two times than the general population to have diabetes, for example. And so hopefully some of these statistics starts to, you know, really lay out the opportunity, the need for us to better understand these disparities and really start drilling into how we can eliminate them. And so starting there, really, with the first question for this panel, would love to hear how you guys think about within your organizations oral health disparities and, you know, where you're seeing some of the most prominent in the communities that you serve. Camilla, would you like to take this first?
Sure. Thanks so much, Katie. And thanks for having me back. It's always a treat to be here. So thank you for that. And you mentioned maternal health as an example of the impact that improved oral health care can have on outcomes. And data is the reason that we know this. Looking at nationwide claims data at DentaQuest, we serve over 35 million members. We gain huge insights about disparities and the variety of angles that exist to address them. And a little bit of context here to elaborate on some of the statistics that you were mentioning. You know, part of a healthy pregnancy includes maintaining optimal oral health to protect against oral bacteria associated with preeclampsia, toxemia, eclampsia, premature birth, low birth weight babies, and other adverse outcomes. Yet, we know that 60 to 75% of pregnant women experience oral health issues, meaning they're at greater risk for those dangerous outcomes. Poor oral health can also exacerbate other underlying medical conditions that were mentioned in the previous panel, and specifically heart conditions, which are a leading cause of pregnancy-related deaths in the U.S., according to CDC data. Now, unfortunately, fewer than half of pregnant women nationally have their teeth cleaned during pregnancy. Black women are 14% less likely to get their teeth cleaned during pregnancy than white women, even though data shows no difference in dental visits prior to pregnancy for those groups. Additionally, research shows that pregnant women whose medical providers promote oral health are twice as likely to report having had a dental visit, even after adjusting for some other factors. So data like this reinforces why DentaQuest is so focused on oral health literacy and education, both for patients and providers. So just like in the previous panel, as they mentioned, we do understand that there are so many factors that influence this, and awareness and education really comes down to it. And not just for the members, which I think, or the patients, which I think is often the angle taken, but also for providers. Because at the end of the day, these women, for example, do go see their OBGYN and or other, maternity PCPs, but they don't go see the dentist. So strengthening that link and collaborating in multiple ways with MCOs and other health plans, bringing the mobile dental services to high volume medical days, for example, on clinic days, you know, providing education on oral health competencies for medical PCPs, on prevention, assessment, risk factor identification, formalizing dental care referral processes with referral forms, acknowledgments of those referrals being required by the PCP, and then regular referral treatment reports are some of the things that we do. We even supply mock prescription pads to medical PCP offices to make referrals to DentaQuest easy. Clearly, they don't actually refer to the dentist, but it's that action of that reminder to actually say, look, here's a mock prescription. Don't just write the prescription for, you know, diabetes or whatever this member may be going through. Go ahead and send them a referral to a dental visit as well. So we collaborate in a variety of ways. And then we do have some formal programs as well. So we have something called a Smiling Stork pregnancy program, where we engage primary care physicians to promote dental services for pregnant members through a bunch of medical and dental integration focus areas, where oral health is associated, you know, with a bunch of systemic conditions. And when they visit their OBGYN, there's actually an opportunity to assess them, and based on that assessment, you know, refer further, and also discuss oral health hygiene, which I know my co-panelist here will discuss in a lot of detail in just a moment. And we found that just implementing that program in the state of Colorado, for example, recently, where it was brand new to the state, we saw a 24% increase in dental utilization among our pregnant members. So lots of opportunities to get better here for sure.
That's great. Thank you, Camilla. And for the example, I think it's, you provided such a spectrum of different data points and examples to show that innovation also takes a lot of different shapes and sizes, right? And sometimes some of the most simple enhancements to workflow can actually have, you know, the most impact. Maria, would love, I know you have a ton of perspectives on this topic. And, you know, as you talk through how you're thinking about oral health disparities, would love if you highlight some of the things that Colgate is doing as well to help ultimately eliminate those disparities.
Thanks, Katie. And you know, thanks to the CareQuest and Matter teams for putting this together and inviting us here. I think this is a really important topic and we need all the help we can get. So all the listeners and people who are on the call, you know, we look to work with you to move this forward because it's really important. And at Colgate, it really is our purpose to reimagine a healthier future for all people, their pets and our planet. And so this really fits into the purpose of our company. And we believe that, you know, we should start with health advocacy and improving on people's oral health literacy. And we think that we're well positioned to help to do that, to reach out to the communities that we serve, because we are in 60% of all homes. So we have initiated a number of different programs to improve on oral health literacy. Most recently, we have a little quiz called Know Your OQ, or Oral Health Quotient. It's a 10-question quiz. You can go on to knowyouroq.com and see what it is. And it's really to inform people about the diseases, the oral diseases they face, the preventive strategies that they can deploy, and to look at the connections between oral health and overall health, and to understand if they don't address their oral health needs, there are other health consequences that can occur. And also, where can people seek help? And so we, on the U.S. site, and we're taking this globally, so you can imagine being present throughout the world, we have to change various programs to fit the geography. But in the U.S., you know, even talking to people about going to FQHCs, going to the general dentist, going to a DSO, going to a dental school. Many people aren't even aware that they can get help in these various places. So we educate people about their needs. And we found, and of course, I'm a scientist, so it has to have data. So we have looked at populations who have taken the quiz, and we have found that it changes their knowledge, their attitudes, and their practices. So educating people can help, and it also makes them advocate for better oral health when they understand their needs. So we continue with programs like that. We have a flagship program, Bright Smiles, Bright Futures, We have reached 1.7 billion children with a goal of reaching 2 billion by the year 2025, and we're well on our way to do that. And that program, to Camilla's point, reaches out to the parents of the children, right? Starting with the mothers and the parents, the teachers, to educate children early on about the importance of oral health, because the earlier we start, the better off we are. But we do think, to David's point earlier, that with mobile apps and new technologies, we can reach far more people. And we are doing some projects right now using mobile app technology where we believe we'll reach 6 billion people and help them. And this not only aids in improving on oral health literacy, but it also raises awareness for advocacy for oral health priorities among policymakers, decision makers, the media, and civil society. And these types of mobile apps can help with early detection of disease, using remote screening or diagnostic tools to improve on early treatment, and to facilitate access and improve quality of healthcare services. In addition, mobile apps can help with surveillance. We just had a global oral health conference, which Maisha and I were at the University of Pennsylvania, and met with people throughout the world who are trying to get a handle on the needs and access issues that people face. So through mobile oral health surveillance, we can collect epidemiological data as well as monitor quality of patient care and service delivery. And in partnership, I think it was mentioned also by David to start pilots, right? So that's what we do. We start pilots in different parts of the world. So in partnership with the Kenyan Ministry of Health, we launched an AI-powered accessible diagnostic tool, which could be used by the public and the profession. And the tool allows for access to their oral health. It enables us to give tips and it enables us to guide them and get access to care. And for the Ministry of Health, it gives the Ministry of Health real-time data. And for the user, it increases health awareness and access to care. And then, we also need to educate the next generation. So we have a student app. We've reached out to college students, deploy all the people we can to get the message out, dental students, et cetera. And we look at interdisciplinary care, working beyond oral health professionals, reaching out to nurses and nurse practitioners, to physicians, physicians' assistants. In collaboration with the 100 Million Mouths program, which Hugh Silk and the group at Harvard have put together, where they have oral health advocates in different professions throughout the country, we can enhance the knowledge and skills of general health professionals, as well as expand awareness and prioritize oral health interventions. And then finally, I would just want to make a comment that when you think about the industry, through the World Economic Forum and the Global Health Equity Network, we have created an oral health affinity group, actually, which I co-chair with Ali Neal from Henry Schein, as well as Marko Vujicic from the Health Policy Institute of the ADA. And that came about because the World Economic Forum put together a Zero Health Gaps plan and pledge for CEOs of companies throughout the world to sign. And that plan is to really educate people about the importance of health of their employees and the communities that they serve to the economy of the world. And unfortunately, within that plan, there was nothing about oral health. And we see this happen time and time again. And so the Global Health Equity Network stepped in right away and helped us to create an oral health affinity group. And so we have a white paper that'll be coming out in May that we hope to share with all the listeners on reconnecting the mouth and the body, the economic rationale for a global commitment to invest in oral health. And I think that these efforts will help to improve on oral health inequities. It's a start.
Yes, and thank you, Maria, for all of your leadership at global scale and reach to advance this important mission to all of us. In the last few minutes, would love you guys hit on already a ton of like looking ahead, where you see the greatest opportunity to innovate, but would love like if there's any more specific examples of types of emerging innovation you really see playing a pivotal role in addressing these health disparities. And I'll ask the same question as I did on my other panel as well. What would be your top advice to innovators looking, to really go tackle this challenge that exists? Camilla?
Thanks, Katie. And I love what Maria, what you're doing in terms of this very macro focus and connecting it to the world, right? So that's fabulous. You know, we at DentaQuest certainly have some very tactical things that we continue to work on a regular basis. And that also includes bridging some of these disparities, but really receiving data about medical conditions, so to the previous panel, but also socioeconomic scenarios that are impactful. So I do think focusing on data and increasing the transparency in data is a big opportunity. And this is where startups can really help, right? I always joke that startup time is like 3x corporate time. So we rely on these smaller innovators to go really fast and go quickly. I think together, though, we also cannot ignore policy. And I'll give you some examples. So, for example, we know that lower-income families or families that are most vulnerable when it comes to socioeconomic conditions use their mobile phone much more than anything else. They have a difficult time getting appointments during work hours because they can't afford to, take time off work, right? Much less flexibility in their jobs. And yet, policy requires, opt-ins for mobile communications or texts or reaching out to them in ways other than mail. And it's such a huge barrier for us to be able to reach them and tell them after hour appointments or community fairs that may be in their backyard over the weekend. And it seems that our policymakers, regulators, legislators are just not connecting those dots yet. They're still making it very difficult. Just because we have somebody's phone number, and we always do, by the way, they always put it on an enrollment form, we're not allowed to use it. So, all these standards are being issued around interoperability and FHIR, and requirements are on medical and dental integration. And yet, the most basic fundamental scenario, which is having the ability to connect with this human, is not there. So I would say, together we have to have this drumbeat on being able to reach people without a ton of red tape. And the red tape is significant. It's costly and it's significant. We know these families are much more transient than many others. So mail is actually the worst way to reach them. And yet mail is the preferred and recommended way to reach them. So these are still things that keep us a little bit behind in really able to leverage the innovative solutions. Because as Maria pointed out, apps are for sure the best way to connect with people, but awareness that an app exists in the App Store is only required, is always required to connect somebody to that. But if we can't text them, if we can't call them because of other barriers, then obviously we're stuck in this loop of awareness and opportunity.
Great points. And I think what's also very clear too is there's a role really for everyone to play. Consumer products companies like Colgate to help exactly what you're saying, Camilla, for innovators to jump in and innovate hopefully quicker than corporations can. Maria, anything quick to add before we close?
Yeah, I mean, we're really pleased to, be working with the Smile Health Accelerator Program again this year as a track lead. And, we look at our innovation acceleration priorities with a focus on prevention. But as Camilla said, data-driven business models are very important to us. Tele-advice, digital platforms, and drivers of behavioral change. I know David mentioned for the dentist, but we think about the consumer and the patients, right? How do we change their behavior? And from the manufacturing perspective, we look at quantified health and personalization. And we can't personalize for every single person, but as Carrie mentioned, we can look at high-risk groups, people with diabetes, people with cardiovascular disease, and focus on their needs and how to help them to improve their oral health. the use of devices that can be help us with prediction and making people participate more in their care is very important. And then, of course, health tests, diagnostics were mentioned, screening tests, using the microbiome, biomarkers and genetics are important to us. And of course, we look for sustainable solutions because we do care about the planet as well. So that is very important. So for us, innovation needs to be science-led, and we look for pragmatic solutions.
Thank you so much, Maria, for those insights and for both of you for being here. And Track leads this year in our Smile Health Accelerator program.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Camilla. Thank you, Maria. And to our other panelists, David and Carrie as well. We hope that you have found today's session informative. I really want to thank our panelists for joining and for their keen insights that they've shared. We are so happy to have you join us here today.